Third Hour Friday. What a beautiful and perfect day is outside. Look at the sunshine. Look at the weather. It's an amazing time to be in Southern Nevada here. Good Friday in Las Vegas. I'm Clay Baker, Ryan McKinnell here with us, as we're also joined by Dr. Caleb Pinneger, Southern Nevada's leading sports injury expert. Go online, CrevettiOrtho.com. He's with Crevetti Orthopedics. Fantastic people to work with, and we're happy to be joined by you again. How are you, Dr. Pinneger?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. And we were just talking with Ed. He was live in San Antonio, and you know, it's amazing. As last time we had you on, we were talking about the Michael Porter injury, the surgery that he had, and you were talking about injury that he had in the surgery. He went like a discectomy.
It's a confusing word.
I even made it beautifully said on my part.
I didn't even know that you could combine. I was like, dissection, okay, but that's, the T comes first.
Yeah. But he had it on his L3 and L4 of the spine down below. And you talked about how the last time you said, like, you actually been in surgeries like that where you have to go and widen the area in and around it. So you're actually expanding the area in and around the spine to alleviate pressure, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. There's a couple things that can go wrong in the back, but a herniated disc versus if the space is actually narrowed, if there's stenosis. So we had talked about two problems last time, the herniated disc versus a stenosis of the spinal canal. And depending on what's going on, either the disc is pinching the nerve or there's just collapse of the room. And that room, it starts to narrow, then the spinal cord and the nerves get pinched. And depending on which of the two is going on, you either have to remove the disc, a partial discectomy, or you have to create room by removing part of that narrowing, which is usually bone.
That's incredible, because he made a full recovery to go and play at an elite level in the first round of the tournament when we were talking to you last, and it was very very impressive because that the surgery was actually good, and because he's a younger athlete. You know, I'm sure as you get older, this is probably going to be just as hard, but when you're younger, you're able to, you know, overcome certain obstacles. As we saw within the NBA, Markelle Fultz, and we've been following this story for several months, you and I, and you've correctly explained what his shoulder surgery was and why it was affecting his shot. When he came to the Sixers, all of a sudden Fultz could not shoot the ball. And it was very, very troublesome. And what happens is that he started to do some treatment with virtual reality. And up until that point, everyone was like, well, this is a lost cause, because obviously
he's turned to VR,
and you know what? Maybe he'll never be able to shoot again.
It'll be great at video games.
Yeah. Isn't that the way, though, right? It opens up a new door. But you said, you know what? Virtual reality might be one of those hidden things that it can help you more than you might realize, especially when you're just trying to maybe go through the psychological approach to getting over an injury.
And didn't it seem like that might be so much more of what's going on in his press interviews? He really sounded like this was a confidence thing almost. If you listen to him talk, you're thinking, how hurt was he versus was he just really panicked? And that virtual reality, you know, in the case of an injury, I'm not discounting the fact that his shoulder did have some pathology. You work on all the therapy, you do the motions, but do you want to experiment with that on game day, or do you want to put on the headset, practice live, in as close to a game setting as you can? And virtual reality really opens that door. And like we talked about last time, I really think you'll see a lot more. I think that's got a lot coming. And as the digital interface becomes better and better, you're going to see more of that. It's going to be the future.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I was thinking as you were saying that, as the tech increases and it becomes even more realistic and you can apply it to real-world situations, it's kind of like, how do you not do it?
Yeah. Yeah, and why not? Now you take, okay, we need to get 7 guys to try to make as close to a real scenario. Yeah. So we play some 4-on-4 or whatever, and now you have one guy with a headset on, and it seems just as real as having 8 people in the room.
That is interesting. It's interesting from a basketball standpoint, but as I kind of run through the Rolodex of sports in my head, now I think about, I think about the NFL. And I think about how useful that could be in the sense, if you have VR, at least for like running plays or running through plays, you can avoid so much needless contact running through plays, or like, you know, maybe your QB doesn't have to wear the red jersey. I think it would be very advantageous in a sport like football.
Yeah. I think we'll see more and more of it. The technology is going to get better.
Yeah.
And it's come so far so fast, it's just going to get more applicable.
Speaking of technology and advancements in sports, this is something I'm about to get to has been going on for a while, and that's the hyperbaric chamber. Mm-hmm. It recently came out that LeBron James has been using one. Explain to us how the athlete uses this, why they use it, and what exactly the chamber is. And as I said, it's been going on now for a little bit, but I still feel like it's not, and I'm not going to call it quasi-science, but I still feel like some people might not be fully on board with something like that.
Yeah, well, wound care has used hyperbaric oxygen tanks and oxygen pressure for a while. So basically, if you have a person, for example, that's got a foot wound, they're a diabetic, they have a lack of blood flow in their leg already, your body has to have oxygen in order to heal. And your body has to have the nutrients that the blood cells bring. And if you get a person in a scenario or a situation, you plug them in this tank, it pressurizes oxygen, high oxygen content in that, and it improves healing. It allows that wound to now make gains that it was not making on its own. So you take an athlete who is putting a high demand on their body. They're saying, hey, if this is helping with people with wounds, what will it do to speed recovery in a high profile athlete or in a high demand athlete who's, you know, the inflammation in his body is a little too much for him to continue day to day. Maybe this will knock down the inflammation and let him recover faster so that he can keep up with the high demand. And so LeBron's been doing it for, I'm not exactly sure how long, but I think you're going to see that as, you know, as athletes are realizing, hey, this aids in our recovery. We're not as sore the next day. We can do more in practice the next day. For sure, you're going to see it a lot more.
Now, obviously, advantageous for athletes, as you said, high impact, strenuous activities. My question, I guess, would be, what about on the budget end of things? Is there a not a cheaper option, but a budget option for maybe manual labor folks across the valley if they wanted to invest in something to make their lives a little bit easier, you know, everyday people? Is that an option for folks right now in 2018?
I've seen advertisements for some sites even in town. It's not something that I've seen a lot of physician offices incorporate, but, you know, just like you've got the after the evening IV place that gives you a burst in the morning, and
well,
then you,
God bless those people,
and then you've got the,
everyone here across the valley had the same thought at the same time.
So, and then you've got the oxygen tanks that, I mean, they're going to open up, and you're going to see that as an option if, you know, if people want to incorporate that, it's going to come at a cost.
Right. What about in-home? What about purchasing your own? Is that an option?
It's all just expensive. Of course you can.
Yeah.
The price will come down. As the demand goes up, sure, more competition, you're going to see, obviously, the normal economics type pattern. But for now, it's still quite expensive.
But if you want to, hey, if you want to be healthy, drink water and eat your vegetables. Start there. That's what I'm trying to do.
Always looking for the quick fix. I want to get a chamber here just for my hips, you know, moving back and forth. Right. We're speaking with Dr. Caleb Pinneker with CrevettiOrtho.com. Go online, CrevettiOrtho.com. Learn a lot more about the Crevetti Orthopedic System and the great people that work there, as well as go online here to Facebook. We are doing a Facebook Live at ESPN Las Vegas as we talk about more of what Steph Curry's been going on to. And we've been going and examining Steph Curry's injury history over the past few months, and you pointed out many months ago that NBA players, their knees are very old knees when you start scoping and looking around, and Curry now has a grade 2 MCL tear. He's out for the first round of the playoffs, or sprain rather. How bad is this considering his injury for MCL sprains? And we know how hard he goes, but at the same time, this is just a lingering injury and a chronic one for a young player.
And this isn't the first time he's sprained his. And the good thing is that grade 2 means that it's still connected.
Okay.
He hasn't totally torn the thing apart. So he stretched it. It's sore. It's a little painful. And if you really push on his leg, that means he's got a small amount of laxity. But his knee's stable. It's gonna heal. He's gonna be back. The typical time for these, you know, somewhere between 4-6 weeks, we see people back. But if he's done this before, you wonder, man, what's going on with him? He keeps spraining his ankles, he keeps hurting his knees, but such high demand. We've talked about the demand these guys make, and he's demanding so much, and every time he's cutting, twist, and turning, trying to make his way to the hoop, he's requiring a lot out of that joint. But you put a camera in there, I'm sure it looks like he's older than what he is.
How does it look when it's because he came off an ankle injury and then hurt the MCL. When he came off the ankle injury, he decided to take off the high tops and put on low top shoes. Do you ever tell that to people when you work with ankles? Like, you know what, you need to kind of change the shoe that you're wearing on, and just because it's a high top, that doesn't necessarily mean it's going to protect what you need it to do.
A high top doesn't always protect you. And the other thing the high top can potentially do is, if you're trying to strengthen the muscles around the joint, is the high top preventing the muscle from doing the work and making the muscle lazy? You want the muscle to be strong. So, of course, in physical therapy, you're not wearing a high top. In physical therapy, you're on an uneven board that requires the ankle to feel unstable while you strengthen it, while you make it. You try to kind of coordinate all the muscles as they fire around the ankle because you want the body to respond. If the body doesn't respond, you know, eventually something gives.
As we're sitting here talking about knees and feet and the demand of specifically for NBA players with all the running and stopping and going, I'm reminded of, and this was about a month ago, the photo was released of LeBron James' foot. I don't know if you saw it, but I mean, we're talking like overlapping toes because the stopping and going crunches. It was disgusting. Is that something common with basketball players? To me, it seemed disgusting and completely abhorrent and out of the norm, but I guess it's kind of a more normal than we thought. Is that something you have experience with?
I didn't see the picture, so I'm not quite. If he's got a toe that's curved over the other side, a little curly, multiple curly toes.
It's gross. Yeah.
No, I haven't seen a foot adapt to that demand by creating toes like that. Sometimes that's hereditary or just him. Yeah. I don't know if I'd go straight to blaming his sport for that one.
Okay. Well, I was traumatized.
Dr. Caleb Pinneger, he was with the Dr. James Institute. Follow Dr. James around for a one-year fellowship, learning a lot from one of the greats and bringing that expertise here to Southern Nevada. CrevettiOrtho.com is the website, Crevetti Orthopedics, the business, and Dr. Caleb Pinneger here with us. All right, Isaiah Thomas, you underwent a hip surgery. He finally has to go and deal with this. The femoral hip impingement injury is something that, you know what, it might need to be re-explained because is this something that's going to be chronic for this guy? Because it seems as though that he re-elected to not, you know, go and have this surgery again. Is there something that could be corrected here, or is this just simply trying to, like, make the pain go away?
So I know in his first round, he was trying to avoid the surgery. A lot of rehab, a lot of time off, and the decision early on at the beginning of this season was, should he just get the surgery over with or should he continue to rehab this? And it sounded like he went with the rehab route, hoping to avoid that. And as he tried to increase the demand on his hip, unfortunately now he's faced with that surgery. So if you, in the type of problem that he's got, you have a ball and socket joint. And the ball and socket joint, it's designed to keep the hip stable, but it's also designed to let the hip move. And if there's too much stability, you sacrifice movement. So now you have this impingement is where basically the hip, the socket of the hip is either too deep or it grabs too tight around the hip, around the ball, and when you try to move it, pinches it, or the ball starts to get deformed and you develop impingement where the ball hits the socket. So,
really?
Give me a heebie-jeebies, man.
Yeah.
I'm
he's dancing around here. That's disturbing.
So
hip thing.
It's in that position. You have to decide. Okay, are the bony structures hitting each other, impinging or pinching each other, and do we need to go in and make more space so that the hip doesn't hurt? In the process of that, you start to tear the soft tissue some, and so that's the whole process of impingement of the hip, and now he apparently it's become too much. His conservative care is not working, and now he's got to go in and actually address the inside problem.
He becomes a free agent, and you've seen a lot of athletes over the years in these kind of situations where they're in a contract year. They want to make sure that this is something where they can tell everybody, I've returned to 100%. Mm-hmm. Is that a realistic contribution or idea there?
You know, there's not a single surgery we do where we can guarantee 100% success, unfortunately. The success rate is good. You know, we're talking 70-85% that he's back.
That's good.
But you know, I think he will have to prove himself, because that's what going to be what everybody knows. Is he part of the 15% or is he part of the 85%? I think he's recovered from a lot. I think if we go in and he gets his hip cleaned up, then let's hope he can pull off the recovery and be right back.
All right, let's pivot to baseball here real quick. Salvador Perez, Royals catcher, he goes out and he pulls a grade 2 MCL grade 2 MCL tear bagging luggage, his own luggage, which I still can't get over. I figure it's like the athlete who gets the DUI. It's like, dude, hire a driver, you know?
Somebody's got to carry your bags,
so. Yeah, you're a Major League Baseball player.
You're an all-star.
You're a catcher. You're an all-star and you're a catcher. So he goes out here, gets this grade 2 MCL tear. He had the same left knee repaired in his meniscus last year. So I guess my question to you is, how long can a guy like Salvador Perez with these issues continue to play catcher in Major League Baseball?
You know, the meniscus tear to me is a bigger deal than this MCL tear.
Yeah.
The MCL tear, that's a twist, it's a turn, whether he slipped on some water while holding his luggage or up a stair. I saw a couple reports on what he might have done, but but either way, that's a quick jerk to the knee, and now that heals. The MCL is a very reliable healing structure. The meniscus, the fact that he got back after the meniscus tear, that's even better for him. So I don't think long-term it changes him much.
Dr. Pinneker worked in Florida, saw a lot of baseball injuries going down. What about when pitchers have a displaced fracture in their throwing hand on one of their fingers, like Madison Bumgarner had last Friday, the broken fracture on his pinky finger of his throwing hand? Talk about the wait time for that, and how bad is that? What is a displaced fracture exactly?
So a displaced has to do with, did the bone break and stay put, or did the bone break and move? And so when a displaced, that means that it's moved out of position. So I know there was talk about whether he'd be getting a pin put in his finger, because if a finger is out of position, you have to line it back up, and if it doesn't stay lined up, you have to put a pin in the thing. And so...
Uh-oh, Ryan's moving around again. It's making
he's starting to get the heebie-jeebies again.
No, I mean, so. I'm okay with the finger. It was the hip that was getting me for whatever reason.
So you got to put pins in the finger?
Yeah,
well,
things.
If it's displaced and if it is unstable, you have to stabilize it. And the answer to that is to place a pin in the finger. It spans where the two fractured bones are, holds him in position, he wears a splint, and you let it heal.
Can that affect his career going forward? I mean, I know how when you get a break and it calcifies and it can kind of change... You know, the structure mm-hmm. of your hand. We're talking about his throwing hand. We're talking about a pitcher.
Repeated motions.
Right. Yeah. I'm aware that the pinky isn't the most important, I guess, from a pitcher, but it is. I mean, it is an anchor. It does affect. If you have any case studies or any experience with that, you know, changing a pitcher for the worse?
There wasn't much really good about that. I did some looking, and in all truth, a finger heals. Yeah. You're usually talking 4 or 5 weeks with the pin in place, and then you're talking about trying to get the range of motion back. The trouble with the finger is usually after you hurt it, it's stiff and sore for a while. I mean, even you're talking months. The bone's well healed, but now you're dealing with the stiffness, the soreness, and some swelling. So, you know, will he be back? You know, his grip's going to be back. His strength is going to be back. And he's going to push through some pinky soreness. I don't think it severely changes his ability to throw.
Nothing long term.
No. Yeah.
That's the voice of Dr. Caleb Pinneker, CrivettiOrtho.com. One more question for you on baseball. We always hear the oblique injuries that come out of spring training. One is affecting Yankees Jacoby Ellsbury, but they're going to happen in and out. What was the diagnosis before we called it the oblique? Because it seems like oblique, the injury came into fruition about 5 years ago, but that was probably being misdiagnosed as chest injury or shoulder or what? What is it, the oblique, and why is it so serious that it keeps players on zero timetable?
The oblique is part of your core. So when you hear about core, you're talking about the muscles in your back, the muscles in your abs, the muscles on the sides, and the obliques are the sides. They're responsible for that rotation more. So when you're doing rotational exercises, the obliques are doing a lot of work. And in a baseball player who's batting, there's a lot of rotation. That's where we see oblique strains or injuries. And in a pitcher, we see a lot of those just because of the demand and the rotational movement with what they're doing.
Makes sense.
So we do see less of those recently because there's more focus on core. These guys are working on their core strength. They're working on their flexibility. And so it is good that we've seen less, but unfortunately, when you do get one, it's not a surgical problem. This is a We have to
rehab this,
and trying to push through it doesn't help.
It's one of those situations where you get hard-headed athletes trying to power. Like, you can power through a broken finger or at least the rehab of it and deal with discomfort.
You know that the bone's healed. You know that you're not going to severely injure it. But
trying to do that with an oblique is a whole different monster.
Yeah. You know, every time you try to load up and really swing, or you try to really put some pace on the ball, and, you know, you're going to feel it. So it's slower. It's, you know, the recovery's not forever. You're talking about weeks, but the problem is that the recurrence of these injuries is also high. You're still 12-15% of the time within a year or so, they might do it again. So let's rehab it well the first time so that we don't have to go through the process.
What do you
time.
Normally tell players or teams when they need to know information on oblique? There's obviously certain grades of it, but you say, like, I've seen players that it took them out for at least 4 months last year, and they end up returning in September, which was way too late for a season. Mm-hmm. But I'm sure there are people want a timetable in some regard. Is there anything that can actually go and speed up that process? It's all just a wait and see with a rest?
It's a wait and see, you know. People get into, can we put a stem cell injection in there? Can we put a cortisone injection in there?
Yeah.
And in some of these cases, some of those injections actually makes people worse. So, unfortunately, the things that we want to do to speed them up potentially might, you know, the rest and wait for this one's potentially better than actually sticking some medicine in the spot.
And is that is also part of your work? People will actually go and make suggestions like that. You know, they're hoping to speed up the process, and you have to be honest with them, right?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we see people along the whole spectrum of a ligament tear or a meniscus sprain to all the way up to severe arthritis, and they've read the latest and greatest, and they want a stem cell injection or they want a cortisone injection, and oftentimes you have a frank talk. You say, hey, we can offer that to you, but I try to be very honest. I don't want to waste people's money. I don't want to waste their time. They may have heard that it's the greatest thing, but there are circumstances where it just won't help. There's another treatment that's so much better that I can't offer them what they think they need or want, because really what they need is totally different.
Go online, CrevettiOrtho.com, as well as on Twitter, Crevetti Ortho. Crevetti Orthopedics is with Dr. Kayla Pinneger, doing great work in Southern Nevada with the leading sports injury expert here in Las Vegas. So what's it like for you? I can't believe I scheduled you for Good Friday. We were like, honey, we were going to go on this vacation, but I got to do this interview with Clay. I mean, we probably should have rescheduled this, because now you got to stick around and you'd be up in Utah somewhere skiing, right?
Well, you know, the family did go ski. It was spring break, but somebody has to pay for all this stuff.
They split without you?
They sure did, you know, so. So I'm here. They're trying to get me to sneak up there this weekend, and we'll see. You know, it's a beautiful weekend down here. Sometimes it's nice to be where it's warm, too.
Yeah, what's it like for your family now, this transition in Southern Nevada, living this beautiful lifestyle and in the great weather? I mean, are they like, wow, we're never going back to Florida, forget it.
They other than missing the beach, everybody's very happy. So I just got to make sure we take them to some ocean every now and then, and I think everybody's, you know, we're not going anywhere.
We can make that happen. We're kind of close to some ocean.
We can make that happen just like that. We'll get in a rental car, we'll get into the hyperbolic jet, and we'll just start...
Stopping Baker for some beef jerky.
Right. And we even go to, like, you know, Area 51 and transport ourselves wherever we want to go. Yeah. We'll make sure you stay here and make sure you're comfortable, because Southern Nevada is a lot better having you here. Dr. Caleb Pinneger, we appreciate it, man. Thanks again for coming in all the way out here.
You're very welcome. Thanks for having me, you guys.
Ryan McKinnell here, Clay Baker. When we come back, we'll go over some of the NFL draft with Scott Bylo next here on the Press Box. Got